Good morning. Welcome to the reading of the Worcester Business Journal. It's 11 a.m. on Wednesday, the 27th of May. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Today, we will be reading from the latest edition. This program is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. This is Joanne with Paul, reading to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And now I will hand it over to Paul.
Thank you, Joanne, and good morning to our listeners. Our first story. Two Worcester hotels plan to begin construction this year, even as demand softens. Both a Hampton, or let me restart. Two new hotels are coming to Worcester. Both a Hampton Inn and a WoodSpring Suites are set to break ground this year in the city. Their eventual openings will be a win for the long-term civic effort to transform Worcester into a premier destination, particularly for large-scale events requiring hundreds of hotel rooms. Yet, the hotel's construction comes as demand is softening slightly, and existing hotels need more of the steady day-to-day business that makes them profitable. "We always have some ebbs and flows," said Jeffrey Karam, co-CEO of Fall River-based First Bristol Group. "We plan to be pretty stable this year versus last year. There's always new businesses and new opportunities coming in." First Bristol opened the Homewood Suites by Hilton Worcester in 2017 in Washington Square, and now is hoping to commence construction across the street in September on its long-awaited 105-room Hampton Inn. Simultaneously, Maryland-based Park Silver Development is set to begin construction at a 122-room extended-stay WoodSpring Suites Hotel near Route 146 sometime this summer. "Hampton Inn is probably one of the strongest limited-service brands in the world," Karam said. "Bringing it downtown, the location, all those factors with a great product will make it one of the leaders in the market." The two hotels will add to Worcester's 1,019 hotel rooms across eight sites, compared to Providence's 3,031 rooms and Springfield's 1,442 rooms, according to real estate data firm CoStar. Worcester's relatively low number of hotel rooms is often cited as a roadblock to hosting major college sporting tournaments and other high-profile events. But the framing of the need for more hotels in Worcester, around a handful of large-scale events, ignores the realities of the hotel business, said Mary Simone, general manager of the AC Hotel by Marriott Worcester. "It's become a narrative, and I just keep on going, okay, that's what we're going to go with," she said. Looking at the state of the market, Simone is skeptical of Worcester's need for more hotel rooms. "The AC status as one of Worcester's newest hotels in a prime downtown location has allowed it to do well, but business-driven travel has been down as of late," she said. Lagging weekday traffic. Occupancy rates in the Worcester hospitality submarket, an area consisting of roughly the southern half of Worcester County, recovered above pre-COVID levels in 2024, reaching a 10-year high in May 2024, of 67.5%. Rates declined in 2025 into this year, hitting 60% in April, right around where the rate was in the months before the pandemic, according to CoStar. This compares to a national occupancy rate of 62.3%, which fell 0.5, half a percentage point, since 2025, but has been stable over the past 3 years, boosted by growth in supply to meet increased demand, according to data from real estate brokerage Cushman & Wakefield. As Worcester hotel occupancy rates have climbed since the pandemic, so has revenue. The average daily rate in the city has grown 27% from $113.51 in February 2020 to $144.49 in February 2026, according to CoStar. Worcester hotels would like to host more visitors coming into the region, especially around major events, meetings, and sports activity, Monique Messier-Joseph, president of tourism marketing agency Discoveral Central Massachusetts, wrote in an email to the Worcester Business Journal. Discover Central Mass supports that effort in a number of ways, including targeted marketing campaigns, event and sports promotion, partnerships with planners and venues, and most recently, a robust Expedia campaign designed to encourage visitors to stay in Worcester and the region. The effort to bring more visitors to the city often centers around the 14,500-seat arena, DCU Center. Yet, those types of events only sell out hotel rooms about 7 times per year, Simone said. You can't build a hotel because of the DCU Center, she added. Simone, who was board chair of Discover Central Massachusetts, said she hopes to see the region's tourism grow and welcomes competition in the local market, even though demand is lower. Simone said weekend traffic is still strong, with Worcester's central location bringing in travelers and the city's downtown area attracting events like weddings and other family gatherings. She has seen a significant drop-off in guests relating to business development projects in the region, a key aspect of filling hotel rooms during weekdays. Projects driving major demand to hotels, such as Amazon's construction of a $300 million robotics fulfillment center in Charlton, have been tough to come by as of late, she said. Even something as simple as JetBlue changing the flight patterns of its Worcester routes can have a big impact on flight crews looking for rooms, Simone said. We lost a lot of money once they changed because I had to put out another salesperson just to go and replace that business, she said. Even NCAA events aren't guaranteed income, as a team's early exit from the competition can lead to empty rooms that hotels then have to scramble to fill, Simone said. $25 million new hotel construction. Local colleges offer a steady source for guests, said Simone and Karam. At Homewood Suites, business travel has been a bit soft as of late, too, Karam said, but the property has met expectations since opening in 2017. Traveling nurses were attracted to the extended stay hotel during the pandemic, helping it weather that time period. First Bristol's new Hampton Inn Hotel in Washington Square will cost around $25 million to build and be complete about 12 to 18 months after construction begins, he said. The location is superb, right at the intersection of Shrewsbury Street with all the restaurants and nightlife, and then downtown and being connected to the DCU Center, Karam said. It's got easy visibility from the highway and good access. I think all those factors with a great product will make it one of the leaders in the market. For our next story, Berkshire Blanket moves to Worcester to fuel next phase of growth. Berkshire Blanket and Home Company relocated its headquarters from Ware to Worcester in September, a move the company says positions it to rapidly expand while gaining access to a broader workforce, stronger transportation connections, and a growing business environment. The relocation comes as Worcester increasingly works to attract companies looking beyond Greater Boston for room to grow. Berkshire leader said the city's location, infrastructure, and talent pool made it a natural fit for the company's next phase. Worcester's upward trajectory and positive environment helped solidify the decision, said Scott Madelin, Berkshire's CEO and president. The company's growth comes during steady expansion in the home goods industry. Driven by demand for sustainable and innovative products, the global market for home goods is expected to hit $2 trillion by 2028, averaging about 5% growth each year, according to industry data provider Allied Market Research. Founded in 1993 in Ware, Berkshire has evolved from a regional blanket manufacturer into a global home goods company. The business rebranded from Berkshire Blanket to Berkshire Blanket and Home Company to reflect its broader product offerings. The company has tripled in size over the past 5 years and is aiming to double again over the next 5 years through diversification, international expansion, and a continued focus on quality, said Madeline. Berkshire is expanding its reach in markets, including Europe, South America, Asia, and Australia. Worcester offers advantages that support those ambitions, he said. Compared to Ware, the city provides access to a larger regional talent pool, allowing Berkshire to recruit employees from Worcester and surrounding communities as it grows. There's a breadth of talent in Worcester, said Timothy Murray, president and CEO of the Worcester Regional Chamber of Commerce. a lot of access to transportation, ability to draw from talent, and a diverse workforce sets Worcester apart. As the second largest city in New England, Worcester has colleges, universities, transportation access, and a growing housing market to help businesses attract employers, Murray said. Berkshire is making a deliberate effort to hire locally while accommodating employees and collaborators traveling from all over the world. Worcester's access to highways, airports, and hospitality infrastructure has made collaboration with global manufacturing partners more efficient, said Madeline. Keeping New England roots amid globalization. Berkshire employs 88 people and produces more than 50 million units annually across its product categories. While manufacturing takes place in North Carolina, China, Southeast Asia, Europe, and Africa, product design and development remain centered in New England. The company still has the feel of a small business, said Madeline. We've made a conscious effort to keep our New England roots, even as we've grown and expanded across the world. The emphasis on company culture was echoed by Vice President of Product Development and Packaging, Holly Rosen, and Design Director Christina Carroza, who both described Berkshire as having a family feeling aligned with Madeline's mission of providing comfort and warmth to as many people as possible. Madeline's favorite part of leading Berkshire has been growing with the company and watching it happen. The company's family-oriented culture extends to its employees through flexible scheduling and accommodating individual needs, Rosen said. Inside the Worcester headquarters, Berkshire's designers and developers research international trends and conduct in-store analysis to better understand customer preferences. Teams then collaborate on which products best align with customer demand and company standards. Some designs can never make it to the store, said Carroza. It's decided that the customer might not want them. Once finalized in Worcester, product designs are sent to manufacturing partners in China, where Berkshire incorporates what Rosen described as the company's unique secret sauce through adjustments to yarn size, weight, and finishing. The small details are what makes Berkshire's products different from other companies, Rosen said. Berkshire's products are sold through retailers including Target and Meijer, and the company partners with brands such as Life is Good and Draper James. As part of its Worcester expansion, Berkshire plans to deepen its involvement with local nonprofit organizations. The company already partners with nonprofits like Abby's House in Worcester, where the company donates blankets and robes. Madeline is proud of Berkshire's longstanding partnership with The Water Project, a nonprofit focused on expanding access to clean water in sub-Saharan Africa. Donations supporting the organization come through sales of Berkshire's EcoThread product line. For our next story, banks find way to finance nonprofits despite their lending and revenue challenges. Founded in the basement of a Hopkinton home, the nonprofit project Just Because moved locations five times in its first 24 years of existence as demand for its services grew and space became too tight. I always wanted to buy a building so our legacy would have staying power, said founder and president Cheryl Ann Lambert Walsh. That staying power arrived in 2022 when Natick-based Middlesex Savings Bank provided a mortgage enabling Project Just Because to switch from renting facilities to buying three commercial condominiums for $2.1 million on South Street in Hopkinton, totaling more than 16,000 square feet. The nonprofit went from serving 40 families per week to 950 at the new facility, providing food, clothing, and household items to those in need, fulfilling Lambert Walsh's vision when she started the nonprofit with her young children in 1998. The numbers have changed through the years. There is more need than ever, she said. Because nonprofits have traditional financial structures, banks often have to get creative to provide them with enhanced financial services. Yet, nonprofits can become excellent bank clients, especially those with established cash flow history. With more than 40,000 nonprofits operating in Massachusetts, they can make up a significant portion of banks' commercial loan portfolios. Nonprofits in general are considered higher risk, said Sean O'Connell, president of Fidelity Bank in Leominster. They can be trickier because so many considerations go into them. Overcoming financial risk. When a For-profit business needs a commercial loan. A bank can assess its financial risk by evaluating the company's revenue, cash flow, operational history, and profit and loss statements. Business owners often will provide equity and a personal guarantee, putting up assets like their homes in case the business defaults on the loan. It really is the cash flow and the collateral, said Mary Dean, president and CEO of Clinton Savings Banks. Savings Bank. Nonprofits don't have owners, so no one can provide a personal guarantee of collateral. Their revenue typically relies on fundraising, grants, and distributions from endowments, all of which can vary from year to year. By design, they don't have profits, so they don't necessarily have money to draw on if their cash flow were to dry up. It is important to understand the business and how they get paid, said Thomas Galvani, Executive Vice President and Chief Retail Banking Officer at Fidelity Bank. To help nonprofits, it is helpful to see them similarly to for-profit businesses. Cash flow and cash on hand are the big determining factors when making loans, Galvani said. The best nonprofit clients will have a long history of financial stability, reliable sources of revenue, and perhaps large endowments to fall back on. Being a mutual bank, we want to support nonprofits in our community as much as possible, so we will service them where we can, O'Connell said. If a nonprofit is newer or doesn't have a strong financial history to justify a loan, Fidelity will establish a relationship with it similarly to any new business. The nonprofit can open an operating account so it can have basic financial services and build a rapport with Fidelity's team. Clinton Savings Bank will partner with institutions like the Federal Home Loan Bank or the U.S. Department of Agriculture to help nonprofits get the financing they need. For example, Dean said a local nonprofit was looking to buy property and construct a building with a USDA loan, but the government agency couldn't fund the construction under the loan conditions. So Clinton Savings provided the financing for the construction, and then USDA bought out CSB's loan once construction was complete. Nonprofit lending comprises 4% of CSB's commercial loan portfolio. CSB offers nonprofits a unique deposit account with a higher interest rate than a typical business checking account. When we are financing nonprofits, we know it is mission work, Dean said. These aren't large national nonprofits. These are local and regional ones, and we know the good they do in the community. If all else fails, banks will make donations and sponsorships to nonprofits to help them fulfill their missions. Fidelity Bank donates about $450,000 to more than 200 nonprofits annually. We support nonprofits in the community, whether they are bank customers or not, O'Connell says. Even though Fidelity didn't take the mortgage loan to project just because, the bank, and Galvani specifically, was critical in helping the nonprofit improve its financial standing by setting up fundraisers like a golf tournament and an auction night, said Karen Regan, fundraising director at the nonprofit. All that fundraising laid the groundwork for Project Just Because to get its mortgage loan, Regan said. The nonprofit still relies heavily on donations for its food bank, particularly from grocery stores among the region, like Trader Joe's, she said. In the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, Project Just Because became a member agency of the Greater Boston Food Bank, which supercharged demand. The nonprofit spends an average of $263 per family each week. It can be tough to get a bank because they view nonprofits as high risk, Lambert Walsh said. Luckily, we've had some deep-seated friends who helped us. And now for a short break.
What's your vision?
My vision is 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye, zero vision in the left eye.
No. What's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, we believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
Welcome back to the reading of the Worcester Business Journal, a production of Audio Journal. It is 11:19 a.m. Two new Worcester dispensaries open as industry adapts to new cannabis laws. Amid major changes in the legal cannabis industry, two new dispensaries have opened their doors in Worcester. After a mid-February soft opening, Joint Operations held a ribbon-cutting ceremony for its new store at 142 Southbridge Street. It is joined by the Corner Emporium, a dispensary at 40 Jackson Street, which opened in early March. Both stores focus on recreational consumers rather than patients in the state's medical marijuana program. With the new openings, there are now 15 adult-use cannabis retailers in Worcester and over 400 across the state, according to the Cannabis Control Commission data. Joint Operations is owned by Westboro-based Cannapreneur Partners, according to its application with CCC. The company has additional stores in Gardner, Mendon, and Raleigh. I grew up right on Jefferson Street, literally a five-minute walk down to the Canal District, and it's just a really big deal to me to be part of this community, Jose Abarca, General Manager of Joint Operations, Worcester location, said at a ribbon-cutting ceremony. Joint Operations filled space vacated in 2023 by Florida-based Trulieve in 2023. Trulieve, one of the largest cannabis companies in the country, closed its Worcester and Framingham dispensaries and left the Massachusetts market after the fallout from the 2022 death of Lorna McMurray, a worker at a cultivation facility it operated in Holyoke. The company said its exit from the state was the result of efforts to improve its financial performance. The site is owned by Worcester landlord and developer Jefferson Marierin, who owns several properties in the area. Joint Operations received a special permit from the Worcester Planning Board in July 2025, with the company represented by Isaac Fletcher of Northampton-based law firm Cable Fleischer and Sosabee, according to meeting minutes. The Corner Emporium has been working to open in the city since 2018, said Joe Johnson, Worcester resident and CEO of the business. Johnson credited the patience of Stephen Rothschild, the site's landlord, with allowing the business to retain the location while it worked to find the right investment team and to navigate the state licensing process. He also credited Joseph Gilmore, a program administrator of the state's Cannabis Social Equity Trust Fund, with helping the company navigate the state's grant process. The Corner Emporium was established as an economic empowerment priority applicant, a state-led effort to ensure that most impacted by past cannabis prohibition enforcement efforts were allowed access to the legal industry. This allowed the company to receive $250,000 in grant from the trust fund in fiscal 2025, according to state records. The store plans to stand out from the competition through volunteering efforts and donations, Johnson said. Noting the rising cost of other goods like gasoline, he said the goal is to make products as affordable as possible. Traffic at the store has been picking up since it first opened, with the goal of averaging 100 customers per day. Mark Borenstein, an attorney in the Worcester office of Boston-based Prince LaBelle, assisted the business with local permitting and licensing, according to an Instagram post from Prince LaBelle in March. Adapting to change. Joint Operations in the Corner Emporium entered the market as cannabis businesses react to several developments at both the local and national levels impacting their operations. In April, an order issued by the acting U.S. Attorney General Todd Blanche and the Drug Enforcement Administration moved certain cannabis products, including Food and Drug Administration-approved cannabis products and those produced by state-regulated medical marijuana firms, into Schedule 3. The order removed those products from the previous status as Schedule 1 substances, the same category as drugs such as heroin and LSD. Blanche's order also initiated an expedited administrative hearing process beginning in June for the broader rescheduling of all cannabis products to Schedule 3, a move which could result in tax benefits and more access to banking services for cannabis firms, according to the Ohio State University Moritz College of Law. At the state level, Governor Maura Healey signed a broad overhaul of the state's cannabis regulatory scheme into law in April. The bill replaced CCC's 5-member commission with a 3-member panel. Beyond overhauling the CCC's governance, the bill implemented reforms to rules governing ownership and allowed for consumers to purchase and possess up to 2 ounces of cannabis instead of just 1 ounce. Healy named CCC's new leaders on Tuesday, with former Revenue Commissioner Christopher Harding chairing the commission. In addition to regulatory changes at the federal and state level, the industry is facing a potential ballot initiative in November to ban recreational cannabis businesses. While Joint Operations and the Corner Emporium opened this year, other cannabis companies have closed for good due to financial problems, including Atlantic Medicinal Partners in Fitchburg. Next article. Community Health Link layoffs rise as transition negotiations progress. The number of projected layoffs at the closing Community Health Link affiliate of UMass Memorial Health has increased, as the health care provider has made progress in transitioning some CHL programs to nonprofits. Worcester-based UMass Memorial plans to lay off up to 84 employees at Community Health Link, according to a May 7 Worker Adjustment and Restraining Notification Act filing. This is an increase from the 78 reported a week earlier. Those layoffs will take place in Worcester, Webster, and Leominster, according to the filing. They will take place between June 30th and July 6th. Community Health Link, a Worcester-based affiliate of UMass Memorial, is set to close, although no final closure date has been announced. The organization provides inpatient and outpatient care for children and adults, as well as substance use treatment, regardless of a patient's ability to pay. CHL serves more than 20,000 people and families each year. UMass Memorial said in a statement, it is committed to helping support caregivers impacted by CHL's closure by helping them identify other positions within the UMass Memorial Health System and collaborating with other community partners on any potential employment opportunities. Additionally, we are working to develop retention plans for caregivers and are providing workforce readiness training. David Foley, president of the Service Employees International Union Local 509, which represents workers at Community Health Link, said in a statement the organization would continue advocating for job preservation. As we continue to receive updates about CHL's closure, SEIU Local 509's priorities remain the same for our members and the communities we serve. We demand that UMass preserves the continuity of services and retention of workforce. We demand that workers should not be required to reapply for their own jobs, Foley said. The layoff expansion comes as UMass Memorial Health signed a letter of intent with Behavioral Health Network of Springfield to operate some of CHL's Worcester-based programs. In addition to BHN, UMass Memorial is in active discussions to potentially transition other CHL programs to clinical support options of Northampton, as well as Open Sky Community Services and the Central Massachusetts Housing Alliance, both based in Worcester. According to UMass Memorial, BHN is interested in running Worcester's Community Behavior Health Center Continuum programs for substance use, CHL's Worcester-based programs for assertive community treatment in Worcester, PACT 1 and PACT 2, adult community clinical services, which includes 8 residential locations and 2 integrated teams, Safe Haven, children exposed to domestic violence, the Department of Mental Health's juvenile court clinic, and clinical teams. BHN works with Fitchburg-based nonprofit LUK to run Together for Families, which provides behavioral health care to qualifying clients. CHL's end has drawn attention to the future of its many programs, which serve some of the region's most vulnerable populations, including those experiencing homelessness, mental health issues, and substance use disorder. Transitioning programs to other agencies requires oversight and an approval from regulatory bodies. Originally, UMass Memorial planned to transfer 17 of the CHL's mental and behavioral health programs to two other nonprofits. But one of those partners, Open Sky Community Services, has said it will only take over two. The slated closure comes as UMass Memorial faces staffing shortages and financial difficulties. The entire UMass Memorial system had a $160 million operating loss in fiscal 2025. And now it's time for the next pause.
What's going on in your town is important to you. Meetings that decide your taxes, changes in laws in your community, plans for new housing and businesses, and news about schools are all vital for you to know. Here on Audio Journal, we read many local community newspapers each week. In addition to the news of your community and area, you'll also hear about special events, stories about your neighbors, their businesses, their activities, and more. Stay in touch with your community on Audio Journal, broadcasting to print-impaired residents of Central Massachusetts.
Welcome back to the weekly reading of the Worcester Business Journal, a production of Audio Journal. The time is 11:31 a.m. For our next story, and from the Good News Desk, Worcester Business Journal's Eric Casey named Journalist of the Year. The Alliance of Area Business Publishers has named Worcester Business Journal Managing Editor Eric Casey as its Journalist of the Year, one of five AABP awards WBJ won last Tuesday, including a bronze award in the Best Newspaper category. Receiving this award from AAPB is a huge honor, Casey said. The recognition of the work I've done to help keep the Central Massachusetts business community informed means a lot to me. I want to thank WBJ and New England Business Media for making this possible. In addition to Casey's win, WBJ was honored for its editorials, coverage of breaking news, design, and overall excellence at AABP's 2026 summer conference in Wilmington, North Carolina. All of WBJ's awards were in the medium-sized newspaper category. AABP is an industry association of nearly 60 publications throughout the U.S., Canada, and Australia, in markets including New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, Des Moines, and Arkansas. Awards are not our primary motivation, but it is delightful to be recognized in this way by our peers, WBJ editor Brad Kane said. I'm proud of the work WBJ does every single day, and I'm especially proud of Eric Casey as one of the best business journalists in the country. Judges from the University of Missouri School of Journalism highlighted Casey's investigative reporting on Charles Chip Norton's bankruptcy and his comprehensive real estate coverage in the Money on the Sidelines article. They cited his breaking news coverage of the attempted closures of the Job Corps Center in Grafton and Devens, along with the feature story, Revolutionary Collapse, the Rise and Fall of the Once Largest Cannabis Employer in Central Massachusetts. Casey writes about economic trends, personalities, opportunities, and realities with a clear eye and a thorough command of reporting skills, the judges wrote. His writing takes a sturdy, no-frills approach, and he excels in finding ways to connect with readers through examples, solid data, and smart analysis. WBJ won the Bronze Award for third place in the Best Newspaper category. Its sister publications, Hartford Business Journal, won the Gold Award for first place, and Maine Biz won the Silver Award for second place, as their parent company, New England Business Media, swept all three places in the top category in the contest. Maine Biz won eight total awards, and HBJ won six. The publication offers important explanatory stories with national context and strong deep dive features that tackle important local stories, such as those on skyscrapers, hospitals, and cannabis, the judges wrote about WBJ. The paper shows good community leadership with its spotlight on how local businesses continue to value diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. In addition to Journalist of the Year and Bronze for Best Newspaper, WBJ other awards were Kane and former WBJ publisher Peter Stanton won the Gold Award for Best Editorial for their critique of the former Cannabis Control Commission in the High Drama at the CCC is Bad for Business editorial. Former staff writer Mika Kanner-Mascolo won the Gold Award in the category Best Coverage of Local Breaking News for her story, Clark University to lay off up to 30% of faculty, significantly restructure degree tracks amid financial strain. Former art director Mitchell Hayes won the Silver Award in the category Best Overall Design. When design fosters such a personal connection, it's sure to leave a lasting and timeless impression on its readers, the judges wrote of Hayes' designs. For our next story, WPI receives $5 million to start Climate Technology Incubator. The Massachusetts Clean Energy Center has awarded $5 million to Worcester Polytechnic Institute to launch the Central Massachusetts Climate Tech Hub Incubator. The funds will go toward developing incubator space with an emphasis on pilot-scale research and testing, the school announced Tuesday. Last Tuesday, rather, the incubator will focus on accelerating the commercialization of clean energy, materials, and sustainable technologies. WPI plans to expand and renovate industrial lab space and a building the school owns in Worcester, making way for 7 research suites where startups can work independently while sharing analytical labs and process-scale instrumentation. Too often, promising discoveries stall between the lab and the market. This initiative is designed to close that gap by providing the resources, partnerships, and structure needed to move innovations into scalable, commercially viable solutions. Terry Adams, the principal investigator on the project and director of WPI's Office of Technology, Innovation, and Entrepreneurship, said in the announcement. The incubator will serve as a workforce development and training center with long-term goals of attracting venture capital and federal funding and creating high-skill jobs. Next, Pulmatrix pauses R&D as merger becomes critical. Framingham biopharmaceutical firm Pulmatrix is betting heavily on its planned merger with Houston-based EOS Senolytics, as the company has paused clinical research and development and is looking to license its technology. Pulmatrix has $3.3 million in cash on hand as of March 31st, according to its first quarter financial filing on Friday with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, a decline from the $7.7 million Pulmatrix had on hand in the first quarter of 2025. A going concern notice in the SEC filing said the company's future is highly dependent on the planned merger and that Pulmatrix may need to pursue strategic alternatives or liquidation if the deal falls through. Peter Ludlam, interim CEO and CFO of Pulmatrix, said in an announcement last Friday that the company has secured $1 million in private stock placement from an affiliate of EOS, helping sustain Pulmatrix until the merger. Pulmatrix did not respond to a request for comment. As it looks to merge with EOS, a company working on a treatment to combat age-related decline, Pulmatrix is looking to license out or otherwise monetize 3 assets in its portfolio of inhaled therapies, the company announced on May 15. This includes Pure 3100, an inhaled treatment for acute migraines, and Pure 1900, an antifungal inhalation treatment targeting lung infections. While the merger is pending, Pulmatrix has paused all of its clinical development. R&D expenses were less than $100,000 in the first quarter, the same as they were in the first quarter of 2025, and down from $3.5 million in the first quarter of 2024. The merger with EOS is anticipated to close in the third quarter. A previous planned merger with San Diego drug developer Culgen, announced in November 2024, was called off in March after Culgen found a different merger partner. Pulmatrix had a net loss of $1.17 million in the first quarter compared to a net loss of $1.8 million in the first quarter of 2025. Next, Massachusetts jobless rate held at 4.7% in April. The Massachusetts unemployment rate held at 4.7% in April, nearly a half percentage point higher than the national rate, but employers here added 8,500 jobs last month, state officials reported last Friday. The Executive Office of Labor and Workforce Development also revised the estimated increase in jobs during March to 7,200 after that figure was originally reported at 6,800. Construction, education, and health services, along with professional and business services jobs, were up in April, while jobs were down last month in information, manufacturing, and financial activities. Massachusetts has added about 21,600 payroll jobs since September of 2025, the Labor Office noted, but data posted on the state's website also shows jobs here are up by only 1,500 since April of 2025. Department of Economic Research Chief Economist Mark Rembert said in a statement that job posting activity remains strong across sectors with encouraging signals that the Commonwealth's high-tech industries are seeking more workers as well. The state said the 86.7% labor force participation rate for Massachusetts workers between 25 and 54 years old was at its highest level in 10 years, but retirements continue to be a primary driver for the state's overall labor participation rate, which fell to 65.6%. The state labor force decreased in April by 11,700 people. The U.S. unemployment rate for April was 4.3%. For our next story, BJ's Wholesale to open 5 stores. Marlboro-based BJ's Wholesale Club plans to open 5 new club locations following a quarter which saw its revenue increase but its earnings decline compared to last year. The big box wholesaler is set to open new clubs in Kentucky, Florida, and Indiana this fiscal year, part of an ongoing strategy to open 25 to 30 locations every 2 years, the company announced last Friday. New clubs in Florida will be in Lecanto, Ocala, and Port St. Lucie, bringing the company's Sunshine State presence to 46 clubs. The Kentucky location will be in Frankfort, and the Indiana store will be in Portage. BJ's Wholesale first entered Kentucky in 2025 and Indiana in 2022. BJ's Wholesale is expecting a total of $800 million in capital expenditures this fiscal year, driven by investment in new club openings and improvements to its distribution infrastructure. Counting recent openings in Texas, the company plans on opening 12 stores this fiscal year. We want to make sure we are playing offense and building the franchise for the long term, rather than responding to any competitive influence or any short-term economic disruption, said Bob Eddy, chairman and CEO, during the company's Friday earnings call, according to an investment.com transcript. BJ's Wholesale's latest expansion efforts were announced the same day the company released its first quarter earnings report. The company's quarterly net income was $142.73 million, down 4.7% compared to the first quarter of fiscal 2025. The firm reported $5.66 billion in revenue in the first quarter, growing 9.9%. Revenue from membership sales was up 9.9% to $132.36 million. Gasoline sales drove comparable club sales in the quarter. Total comparable sales grew 6.3%, but that growth was reduced to 1.5% when excluding gas transactions. The company's shares on the New York Stock Exchange fell following the earnings release, trading at $86.64 on Friday afternoon, down about 7.8% from the opening. And now we'll take another short break.
What's your vision? People with disabilities adapt on a daily basis.
They're people you want on your team. And we're here to help you find blind and visually impaired professionals to help you reach your organizational goals. Building an inclusive workforce where individuals with disabilities are welcome is possible thanks to Mass Commission for the Blind. Partner with them to hire individuals who are blind or visually impaired and reach your workforce goals. The success of your organization depends on the diversity of your team. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB to learn how you can become an employer partner for the blindness community. That's 1-800-392-6450 or mass.gov/MCB.
What's your vision?
Welcome back to the reading of the Worcester Business Journal. It is 11:45 a.m. This is a production of Audio Journal. Worcester financial management firm joins New Jersey company. Worcester-based Dream Big Wealth Strategies has joined New Jersey-based firm Cornerstone Planning Group. Founded by Julian Hertel in 2015, Dream Big brings $60 million in assets under management to Cornerstone's registered investment advisor platform, the company announced. Hertel began her career in higher education before transitioning to financial services in 2007. Dream Big will continue to operate under its own branding and will remain headquartered in Worcester. The company is based out of the Central Supply Building at 10 to 14 East Worcester Street. Financial terms of the acquisition were not disclosed. Headquartered in Fairfield, New Jersey, Cornerstone provides portfolio management, infrastructure, and support to independent financial advisors. Cornerstone has more than $1 billion in assets under management. Next story, Railers to get new NHL affiliate next season. The Worcester Railers Hockey Club will have a new National Hockey League affiliate when the team takes the ice for 2026-2027 season opener. The Railers' nine-year partnership with the New York Islanders has come to an end, the team announced on Wednesday. The team has been an ECHL affiliate of the Islanders since it's played its first season at Worcester's DCU Center in 2017. The Railers said the team is staying in Worcester and will retain its current identity. An announcement on the Railers' next affiliate will come at a later date. The Utah Mammoth and the Columbus Blue Jackets are the NHL's only teams without an ECHL affiliate, according to the league's website. The new ECHL affiliate of the Islanders will be the Trenton Ironhawks, a New Jersey-based team set to begin its first season of play this year, according to the league announcement. The affiliation change comes as the Bridgeport Islanders, the American Hockey League affiliate of the New York Islanders, is relocating to Hamilton, Ontario for their 2026-27 season. In the past few years, affiliation announcements for existing franchises have typically come after the end of the ECHL and the NHL playoffs, both of which will wrap up by mid-June. The Railers finished their 2025-26 season in fifth place in the ECHL's North Division with a .535 winning percentage. The team drew an average of 4,034 fans per game, ranking 22nd of the 30 ECHL teams. Last year's attendance figures represented a 10% increase from its average of 3,666 fans during the 2023-24 season. David Aiken, former vice president of ticket sales and corporate partnerships for the Railers, was promoted to team president on April 20th. He replaced Kim Golinski in the role. The Railers' first home game of the 2026-27 season is scheduled for October 17. Next article, Metamagnetics acquires sister company. The Marlboro manufacturer Metamagnetics is absorbing sister company Lanthanide, Solutions as a wholly owned subsidiary, creating a vertically integrated manufacturing process. Metamagnetics specializes in producing radio frequency components used in defense and aerospace systems, with an emphasis on protecting communications in places with heavy signal interference. Lanthanide Solutions is a rare earth element recycling, recovery, and magnet manufacturing company. Both were founded by Vincent Harris, CEO of the Metamagnetics. Lanthanide Solutions, based in Marlborough, uses a non-mining approach to rare earth supply that speeds up production and reduces the environmental footprint compared to traditional mining. Bringing Lanthanide Solutions under the Metamagnetics umbrella allows Metamagnetics to establish a domestic pipeline for an industry where security and onshoring are a priority, the company announced. The merger comes as Metamagnetics, which generates about $20 million in annual revenue, has secured a contract expected to increase production by 3,000%. Initially, Metamagnetics said it would focus on defense and aerospace markets with plans to expand to clean energy, electric vehicles, communications, and advanced electronics. Financial terms of agreement were not disclosed. Next article, developer eyes 50 apartments at former Worcester Academy offices. The Boston-based developer is planning to construct a 50-unit apartment building at the former site of Worcester Academy's alumni offices on Providence Street. First Boston Sustainable Institute is seeking Worcester Zoning Board of Appeals approval for a variance needed to construct a new four-story building at 51 Providence Street, according to materials submitted to the ZBA. The firm is led by CEO Joseph Gallagher. Situated on the corner of Providence and Hudson Streets, the site is about 750 feet from the bridge across I-290, connecting the neighborhood to Canal District. Gallagher purchased the property in November 2023 for $900,000, with Worcester Academy moving to the Walker Hall building on its main campus. Plans for the site call for the construction of a 63,000-square-foot building featuring a total of 68 bedrooms. The application does not mention the number of affordable apartments planned at the site, although First Boston Sustainable Institute describes the project as an affordable housing development. Worcester requires new multifamily projects with 12 or more units to include income-restricted units or to pay into the Worcester Affordable Housing Trust Fund. Gallagher declined comment when reached by WBJ. The building would include four studios, 28 one-bedroom apartments, and 18 two-bedroom apartments. Plans include 50 parking spaces. The project seeks a waiver to front yard setback requirements, looking for a variance allowing a 6-foot setback rather than the required 15-foot setback. The project will need approval from the Worcester Planning Board. Matthew Echo of Worcester-based law firm Fletcher Tilton PC is representing Gallagher for the project. North Andover-based Cube 3 is providing architectural services. And the next article, UMass Chan granted $1.6 million to study safer gene therapy delivery methods. A researcher at UMass Chan Medical School has received a $1.6 million federal grant to study ways to make gene therapy treatments safer. The funding from the National Institute of General Medical Sciences was awarded to Philip Tay, an assistant professor of genetic and cellular medicine, the school announced. Gene therapy works by delivering genetic material into a patient's cells to treat or prevent disease. Those treatments rely on vectors, often modified viruses, to carry the genetic material into the body. While gene therapy is generally considered safe, researchers are continuing to study whether the delivery process can be improved. One concern is, in rare cases, the delivery vehicles may insert genetic material into a patient's DNA in ways to potentially contribute to cancer. Today's research will focus on adeno-associated viral vectors, one of the most common delivery tools used in gene therapy. Using advanced DNA sequencing technology, his team will study how these vectors interact with cells and whether they can be redesigned to reduce potential risks. If we can improve gene therapy vectors, even in a slight way, it's going to have a tremendous benefit, Tay said in a press release. We can tell patients and pharmaceutical companies that we have a better understanding of how these vectors work, and that will open the doors for further research. Tay has been on the faculty at UMass Chan since 2017. And one last article, credit union CEO retiring after two decades. Following a tenure spanning more than 22 years at Leominster-based All One Credit Union, President and CEO Barbara Mahoney is heading into retirement at the end of the year. Mahoney's retirement, effective December 31st, will mark the end of her 45-year career, beginning at the Bank of Boston. I am proud of what we have accomplished together and confident in the bright future ahead, Mahoney said in a statement provided by All One. All One has begun planning to select a new leader. Beyond leading All One, Mahoney has contributed to a number of North Central organizations, serving as chairman of Mass Hire North Central Workforce Board and the Boys and Girls Club of Fitchburg and Leominster, according to her LinkedIn profile. And that's all the time we have for today. You have been listening to the Worcester Business Journal, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. This is Joanne, reading with Paul. Thank you for listening. Reminder, the Worcester Telegram and Gazette will be aired at noon and again at 7 p.m.
Did you know that there are many different ways to listen to Audio Journal? You can go to our website, audiojournal.org, and stream us live. Or you can install the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. Or you can tell your smart speaker to play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or you can dial us at 1-712-770-1043 on your telephone. Or you can turn on your local cable access TV station. You can check our website, audiojournal.org, for the correct channel for your town. And finally, you can use one of our special receivers tuned to Audio Journal's frequency. And if you missed your favorite program, go to our website or the Audio Journal app and listen to podcasts of previously aired programs. Now, if you need assistance with any of these listening methods, please contact us at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Are you elderly or disabled? Did you know each WRTA fixed route bus has a number of accessibility features such as a ramp to enter, a kneeler which can lower the bus, a securement area for wheelchairs and other mobility devices, priority seating for people with disabilities, electronic signage on the front, side, and rear exterior, a bicycle rack on the front exterior, an interior stop request sign, automated audio and visual stop announcements. Let us make your transportation needs easier and ride the bus with us. Call us with questions at 508-791-9782 or visit our website at www.therta.com.
Are you or a loved one losing your vision? Mass Commission for the Blind can help. Reclaim your independence with new skills and assistive technologies. Partner with Mass Commission for the Blind to develop your vision for the future. If you're blind or visually impaired, find out if you're eligible to register for services to help you achieve your career and life goals. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCD. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCD.